Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome once again to another edition of the FootballDiehards.com podcast. I'm Skip Lacombe, and lots of stuff going on this week. Let's get right to it. Let's bring in Bob Harris, senior editor of FootballDiehards.com. Bob, how's it going? You there, Bob?
Signed with the Titans. We got that going for us.
Ah, there we go. How's everything going?
I'm pretty good. How you doing?
Oh, can't complain. Another Friday. Lots of big stuff going on in the league this week.
I guess the Ramsey deal isn't the big news of the day, is it? Oh, well.
No. Apparently that Jay Cutler kid's back in the news.
Get out again.
Yeah. Apparently, the guy who didn't want to trade, then wanted to trade, then didn't want to trade, then didn't expect a trade to happen fast, got traded.
Yeah, everything that we've seen come down like he is now with the Chicago Bears, everyone seems to have made out reasonably well on this deal. Jay Cutler gets what he wants. You can't help but think the irony of something we all heard Chad Ochocinco say on the television box after the season was that, the only people who could talk their way out of a contract and out of a city is a quarterback, and I guess he was right.
Or not talk your way out, or ignore text messages and calls your way out.
Yeah, this goes back. I mean, we've talked about this a number of times, and I think the thing that I noticed all along was this seemed to be about Pat Bowlen wanting to take control of the team. And, he started doing that by firing Mike Shanahan. And, I think he felt pretty good about that until his franchise quarterback didn't. And then the more he had trouble dealing with his franchise quarterback, the more he realized that he got rid of a coach only to grow another coach, and it was Cutler. And, the owner wanted to own this team. Brought in the coach he wanted, did a lot of things he wanted, got rid of a guy that's been next to him for, since the 90s in Shanahan. And I don't think he really cared for Cutler's approach. And, hey, let's face it, Jay Cutler did ask for trades repeatedly, and every time the trade came up, he acted like his feelings was hurt. I'm not going to take everything Josh McDaniels, the new coach there, says at face value, but when he said today, hey, look, we told him what was going on the day we were, the first trade talk about Castle came up, we were on the phone to the player and the agent.
Mm-hmm.
So, all the feigned indignity, that's, I think, what irritates me, as covering this closely, is, there's just been a lot of, I think, over-the-top pretend hurt feelings when really, Jay Cutler got what he wanted all along. The Broncos probably didn't get what they want other than the fact that they got rid of a quarterback the new coach wasn't confident in. Didn't think he had the temperament, didn't think he maybe had the study habits, and there, other things have been mentioned, and maybe didn't think he was a team guy. And guess what? It kind of, some of those things kind of bore out over the period of time. I would point to the way Jason Campbell handled what went on when Cutler was rumored to be going to Washington, and what did Jason Campbell say today? Hey, I'm ready to battle out and prove that they were wrong to want to get rid of me, and I want to be the guy that leads this team for the long run.
Exactly. And when a player comes out like that too, and really shows that he wants to be there and shows he wants to work for it, I mean that's a complete diametrically opposite as opposed to how Jay Cutler has came out and handled the situation.
Yeah, had Cutler come out and said right from the beginning, hey, I want to prove you wrong, and he had that streak in him as opposed to the streak he showed, and that didn't sound as good as I hoped it would, but I don't want to put all this on Cutler. I just think both sides could have handled it better, but I think Jay Cutler really could have handled it a lot better. But in the end, like he said all day, all this afternoon, since being introduced in Chicago, he got what he wanted, and he thinks the Broncos got what they wanted, and they did. They got a lot of draft picks, two number one draft picks. They got a quarterback that, as Josh McDaniel said today, has proven he can win in this league. I think, McDaniels obviously felt comfortable going with Orton, and I think all they're looking for is a guy that would play within their system. And like McDaniels explained today, hey, Tom Brady and Matt Castle aren't the same guy. Matt Castle and Kyle Orton aren't the same guy, but you don't have to be that same guy to succeed in this scheme. He felt Cutler could, but didn't want to and wasn't communicative enough to remain with the team. So, hey, Kyle Orton gets a chance to go back to a place he likes. And from what I heard today, talking to people who had spoken to Kyle Orton, he had no problem at all going to Denver and competing with Chris Sims for a starting job.
Yeah, and aside from the players being switched, this also is going to affect some of the draft stuff going on in a couple of weeks, too. So we're going to bring in Joey Barra in a little bit to go ahead and talk about how all of this is going to be mixing up, too, and talking some more on Jay Cutler, too, in a little bit, too. But some other stuff going on. Plexico Burress was also released by the Giants earlier. Is that a surprise to you?
Yeah, the timing of it kind of was, I think nobody really expected it to come. It kind of came out of the clear blue. But, I think they did have to do something before the draft. They either had to, decide they were going to do something and do it or, decide they were going to do nothing. Now, there's a report late this afternoon suggesting the Giants offered Burress a new deal or a new contract that would have solved the grievance between them. It was heard on Wednesday. You know, Plaxico wanted some of the bonus money the Giants withheld from him after he blew the hole in his leg and was charged for carrying the illegal firearm that did so. So he refused that, and so that's why they decided to cut ties with him. And, you know, again, they needed to know something before the draft one way or the other. But it sounds like had he taken that deal, they would have kept him for 2009 regardless of his legal status. And maybe that would have been his best choice in the long run. But, hey, Plaxico isn't known for making all the best choices.
That is true. Any other teams going to be interested in picking up Burris?
I don't think. I think, you know, everyone's going to take a wait-and-see approach. You know, number one, the legal issue is pending. The hearing is going to be June 15th. There's a lot of talk that, you know, they're using the delay. It was earlier this week. They used the delay they got to work a plea bargain. But, you know, based on the reporting out of New York and by Sal Palantoni of ESPN, even pleading down to a lesser charge, he's going to do some time. So a lot of it's going to depend on when he does that time, when he can work out. You know, if it's maybe he can work out to delay it till after the season. But even then, he's going to have to sit down with Roger Goodell, and I think he's going to miss some time. Short term, I don't think he's a good prospect. You know, if someone can invest a roster spot in him over the long term, then they may get some dividends on that investment.
All right, another embattled player who's had some legal issues, Michael Vick. I was going to pose the question earlier, who do you think is going to be back on a football field quicker, Michael Vick or Plaxico Burress? I think with the news today, that's going to probably be Michael Vick.
Well, I think that's true. You know, at least he'll be out of jail for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
although he may just be working construction.
Yeah, he's got a construction job lined up, and the judge didn't allow his bankruptcy plan, which was primarily based on him returning to play in the NFL and making a big old pile of money, most of which he got to keep and some portion of which the creditors got to keep. The judge said it wasn't realistic to believe he would just automatically go back to the NFL. And I think if you were sitting next to Roger Goodell in his office, you might have seen him nod. Because the big problem for Mike Vick is, you know, not just the ongoing nature of his, you know, of his activities. Hey, he sat down. He planned to have an illegal dogfighting operation. He invested in properties and in an attempt to hide that it was an ongoing thing. And then he lied about it. And he just didn't lie about it to the public. He sat down in office and lied to the commissioner's face. I think that's not going to play well. I'm not sure he's going to be allowed to just walk right back in and start playing in September, which is what his bankruptcy plan called for. And he does think he can play another 10 to 12 years. Says he's kept himself in really good shape. I'm not sure the Wildcat offense will be in vogue for another 10 to 12 years, though, and really that's what he's best suited for at this point in time. I think, you know, heading into his 30th year, I believe he's close to 30, if not 30, you know, a lot of, you know, he never was the best pure NFL-style quarterback that we've seen. I mean, certainly one of the greatest athletes to play the position, but not one of the best quarterbacks of all time, and, you know, that's not going to change.
But really good on his feet, though. So in a Wildcat type offense, would be like somewhere like Miami, for instance, would probably work pretty well in that type of an offensive scheme.
Oh, he would undoubtedly be a dangerous weapon in that offense, and you're going to see more teams using that. I just wonder how long it's going to last. How long that we're going to see the Wildcat? Is that something we're going to see in 10 years from now? We're going to say, boy, that Wildcat still tearing him up, or are we going to see defensive coordinators saying the Wild what?
I mean the Wildcat. Kind of a trick type play. I mean, as long as a defense is expecting and prepared for that, Wildcat offense isn't really that much of a benefit. I mean,
I think we're going to see a nice little run, you know, as part of an overall scheme. But you know, we're never going to see the Wildcat take on a greater part of the offense. And at some point, defenses are going to figure it all out and shut it down. And then, how useful is it to have Mike Vick if he's not willing to be a wide receiver or some kind of flash type player? That's what he's going to have to be. I don't know if that's going to satisfy his debts, for one. And again, he's got, you know, it's going to be hard for him to find a place. I mean, I heard someone saying the other day, and I agree with it. He's going to have to play on either coast because, you know, the more conservative middle part of America may not be ready to have Mike Vick on their team just this point in time. So he may have to go to, you know, everyone automatically jumps on the Oakland bandwagon. I'm not going to go with the cliche. But someone a little more daring, you know, is going to have to take him on. It's going to be a PR hit.
Speaking of daring, what about someone like Jerry Jones trying to pick him up?
That, you know, that would be a guy that I would think would be willing. But, hey, recently, I mean, when Ralph Wilson is going after Terrell Owens, maybe all the conventional wisdom goes by the wayside.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you mentioned the PR hit, too, and there probably aren't that many teams that would be able to afford and take a hit like that, too. And naturally, it wouldn't work out like like with Terrell Owens, were selling tickets and jerseys for Michael Vick. I mean, I don't see people rushing to buy the new Michael Vick jersey. I mean, he certainly has a big black mark on him that he's going to have to get out.
There's going to be a lot of negative attention when he, you know, wherever he comes back. There's going to be a PETA protest waiting to, you know, to cash in on the publicity of him being there and, you know, to get the extra attention that comes with him. And hey, I mean, just, you know, whatever you feel about what he did, America loves its dogs, and they're just not, they don't suffer this
dogs
easily.
And kids, dogs and kids are the two.
Reason, they don't suffer this easily, and it's just, it's going to be a hard sell to bring a guy in there, pay him a ton of money in this economic climate where everyone's bummed out that everyone makes money anyway, and that you're paying this guy a lot of money is going to rub a lot of people the wrong way. And do you want to take that hit at the box office or in, you know, in the media? I think it's going to be a tough sell.
All right, so is Vic going to be a quarterback, or do you think he's going to have to settle for something like a running back to be able to get back onto a team?
He is now officially a slash-type player, no doubt about it. And I don't think he's going to get the kind of money he's hoping to get. But, hey, somebody will pay him to be that slash player. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take him to get there, what the commissioner says, how much he's going to be willing to pay for, and where somebody can find it, they can sneak him in and get him on the roster without taking the big hit that would make it that would preclude it.
Mm-hmm. You are listening to the FootballDiehards.com podcast. Bob Harris is senior editor with FootballDiehards.com. I want to get back onto the Jay Cutler discussion a little bit, because a lot of people have had a lot of mixed feelings about both of this. And I mean, Josh McDaniels is also a very young guy, and I think the story is going to be either he's making some of the most brilliant moves to ever be in Denver, or he's taking that team and demolishing it. Where do you think that's really going to end up playing out?
Yeah, I believe the poker term is all in. I mean, he went all in on this. Now, again, I find it very hard to believe that, you know, and I've heard people say that this is true, that Josh McDaniels and Brian Sanders, the GM, just went out and started talking about trading for Matt Cassel, getting rid of Cutler, and they did all this without the owner's knowledge. I find that very hard to believe. But that has been reported. Either way, the owner obviously got more upset with Cutler than he was with the coach. But McDaniels does, you know, he's going to have to come out, and he's got a lot to prove, not just to the fans, but to the team, too. I mean, he's made some decisions that affect 53 guys in that locker room and their ability to succeed, too. So he's got to convince them he's bringing a program, he's bringing a system, and that enough of them have to buy into it right away. You know, listening to guys like Brandon Marshall today, he sounds very upbeat, very positive about going forward. I mean, obviously some of these guys are buying into this. They got some good veterans bringing in Brian Dawkins, who, you know, kind of understands how the league works, is going to help them. But, you know, if he can get a couple solid defensive players early on and they can get that defense, you know, to start limiting opponents a little bit, they have a chance to do well. But this is going to determine. I mean, a year from now, if we're talking about a new coach in Denver, it would not shock me. He put himself way out on the line, and he's going to have some immediate success to justify the actions that the developments that have taken place, whether they were, you know, directly his actions or the actions of someone else resulting from his decisions. He's in the hot seat for next year already.
Absolutely, and a lot of people are thinking too that the moves in Denver aren't done, that Kyle Orton isn't going to be their guy long term, that they are going to be making some moves here with the draft, or even trying to make some more trades leading up to the draft. And to go ahead and kind of get into that, I want to bring in Joe Hebert, who is one of our resident draft nicks. Joe, how's it going?
It's going well, Jeff. How about yourself?
Oh, not too bad, not too bad. So, what do you think about this whole Jay Cutler stuff shaking out?
It's really been intriguing. I'm pretty much right in line with a lot of things that Bob's been saying. I mean, once Pat Bowlen hit his melting point, that was it. It was done. And, you know, less than 24 hours later, once Bowlen said, it's on, we're getting rid of him, he was gone. So Cutler certainly got in the wrong beehive there, and he's gone. So very interesting, and it's going to cause a lot of shakeups on both teams.
Absolutely. Well, the Broncos didn't just get Kyle Orton in this deal. They also picked up some draft picks. How do you think those draft picks are going to really affect who's going to be the starting quarterback in Denver next year?
I think at this point, Josh McDaniels and the rest of the Broncos management need to make a decision on how long they think either Kyle Orton or Chris Sims can manage that quarterback slot, whether they think they can get a few years out of him or just want to get one, or what their scoop is, because they're now in a position this year to either address a horrendous defense that not only was terrible as it is, but also was swapping to a 3-4 alignment and therefore needs a lot of new personnel, or if they want to go ahead and see what they can do to get a package together and move up and see about getting a franchise quarterback out of this draft.
Do you think Kyle Orton might be that franchise quarterback, or do you think he's just going to be a temporary placeholder?
I think history kind of points to more of a placeholder. I think a lot of people see maybe some alignment with the offense he used to run in Purdue, but, you know, looking at him, I mean, last year he was a 25th in completion percentage and 24th in average yards per attempt and 25th in quarterback rating, and even going to a team that has better weapons in Denver, I don't think you're magically looking at a top 10 quarterback in the league now. I think you're looking at a quarterback who can hold down the fort and professionally run a team perhaps, but if Denver decides, no, we really need a more of a franchise-type quarterback to make this whole offense work, then Norton's not going to do the trick for them, and they're going to need to move up, and they're going to need to put together some packages to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly going to be some more changes going on in the coming weeks leading up to the draft. And, Joe, I want to go ahead and get some conversation going on the draft here in a second, but I want to quickly give Bob his last word on Jay Cutler.
You know, I think, again, talked to at least one Bears player today who seemed a little bummed that Kyle Orton was going. A lot of the players there like him, thought he worked really hard. But, the said, what do you know about Jay Cutler? And the answer was, I know he's a Pro Bowl quarterback. In the end, he is. He's got a Pro Bowl arm. Some of the protection problems they've had in the past are going to go away just because he can get rid of the ball more quickly and he's a little more mobile than some of the quarterbacks they've had in the past. The interesting thing will be to see how Ron Turner kind of evolves. If that offense evolves with a better passer in there, they really don't have the kind of outside weapons. Devin Hester is said to be improving. He had a long way to go before he was the number one receiver, but that's kind of the role they want him in. Earl Bennett is a guy who is said to be making strides in camp and looked good last summer and then kind of went by the wayside. They need more weapons. They got him at tight end. They got him in the backfield. They need a little more on the outside. If Devin Hester can progress, Cutler's going to put up some solid numbers with a strong rushing attack. There's no doubt about it.
Very good. Well, Bob Harris is the senior editor with footballdiehards.com. Be sure to check out his news and views section of the site. He posts everything pretty much in real time. Bob, we'll chat with you next week, man. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome. All right, Joe. Well, going into the draft, we're about 3 weeks away now. Anything big going on there? Anything that people may be needing to pay attention to?
Yeah. One of the things I was looking at here with this whole Jay Cutler scenario is I went ahead and put together some draft trade scenarios.
That's what I want to hear.
Of what Denver might need to do to actually get into a position to get into a franchise quarterback, which in my opinion, franchise quarterbacks in this draft are probably two. There's two of them. I would say either Stafford out of Georgia or Sanchez out of USC. Those are your two possible franchise quarterbacks, and I think to get one of them, Denver's going to need to do some maneuvering. So I'll start on the low end and move up. I think probably the latest possible they can look at getting one of these two quarterbacks is moving up into the number 9 spot, mm-hmm. which right now Green Bay holds. And what's historically true about the Green Bay Packers in the draft is they're very happy to trade down and pick up draft picks. So looking at the draft pick value chart, if Denver wanted to move up into Green Bay's slot in the number 9 spot, what they would need to offer is Denver need to offer their first-round pick, which is the 12th overall, and their third-round pick, which is the 79th overall. And in return, Green Bay would give them their first pick at number 9, and then also the Packers' fifth-round pick, the 145th overall. And this gets these, manufactured points, so to speak, about equal in value. And so that's probably what it's going to take for Denver to get up to number 9. To get to number 5 to Cleveland, if they had to go that far for one of these two quarterbacks, what Denver need to offer would be their first overall pick, which is the 12th, their second pick, the 48th overall, and they'd still be a few points short. So what I have in my draft scenario or trade scenario here is they go ahead and offer running back Ryan Terrain to the Browns, since I think they can use a little running back help and depth there. And in return, Cleveland would send the number 5 overall pick. And the final scenario I put together is sitting in the number 3 spot in this year's draft is Kansas City with their new GM, Scott Pioli. And I think we know Pioli's history from New England. He's not afraid to move down and pick up picks. So I think he'd be in some consideration here. But what it would take for Denver to get into that number 3 spot where the value goes way high, Denver need to send, again, their number 1 pick, which is the 12th overall. They would need to also send the number 1 pick they picked up from Chicago in this deal, the 18th overall. And then they'd also need to send Denver's fourth-round pick. And in return, the Chiefs would send that first overall pick. So that's quite a boatload of talent going across for one mm-hmm. pick.
And so, yeah, and that sounds like it may be maybe a little too rich for Denver's blood. Who do you think of Sanchez and Stafford would make the most impact in Denver?
What's that?
Who do you think between Sanchez and Stafford would make the most impact in Denver?
Certainly in the short term, it would be Stafford. He's got a lot more experience, but you know, I kind of wonder about Sanchez. He's played in that pro set in USC, and he even in just those 16 starts, he's really shown a lot of promise. And I think if Denver and Josh McDaniels were comfortable, that Orton and or Chris Sims could get them through a year or two, I mean, Sanchez might be the better long-term prospect. And to be honest, that's really going to be interesting looking back at this draft in 3, 4, 5 years to see which of those guys, and I'm assuming it's going to be one of these two guys, is the best quarterback from this draft.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they're virtually identical when you take a look at the stats, both 6'2", both right around 225 pounds. So could be very interesting. And you think that both of them are going to be gone by the 9th pick is probably going to be the last opportunity?
The reason I said we had to move up to 9 is because sitting at number 10 is San Francisco. And if San Francisco can't get themselves the offensive tackle that they want, I think it would make a lot of sense if Mark Sanchez was still sitting there, they just go ahead and grab him. So I think that's one of the teams they have to move ahead. And again, all these draft scenarios I just laid out, that gets affected by everything ahead of them. So Detroit's first pick, if they don't grab one of these quarterbacks to start things off and they go tackle, then that allows Denver to look at some of these earlier scenarios where they don't have to move up so high because that first quarterback didn't get grabbed so often, or so high, rather. And I think pretty much, you know, most of the teams in this draft, and there's a good number of teams looking for quarterback that might be willing to move up. So it's not like Denver's the only team doing that. I mean, you have Seattle would be interested in a quarterback in the right scenario. The Redskins have already proven that. The Jets, Tampa Bay, all these teams could come knocking at the door to any of the teams I mentioned that would be willing to trade out and pick up more picks. So it could go it's going to be a seller's market, I think, come draft day.
Absolutely. And we'll have a couple other big quarterbacks that are still making some news. Josh Freeman out of Kansas State. How's he looking in his, over the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, in theory, he's moving up draft boards is what I'm hearing, but, you know, that's some of that's sort of fictional. I think as teams get more and more in-depth on these guys, and then the people start to land really just where they were going to land anyway. It's just that now more work's being done on the guys to sort of justify where they're going to land. But, Freeman, as we've talked about a little bit before, he is the prototypical build of a quarterback in this draft. He's 6'6", almost 250 pounds. He's got a huge arm. I think some of the negatives out there, though, is he's not very good at anticipating his receivers' breaks or reading some defenses, especially some zones. Overall, his history is he doesn't have a very high completion percentage, and that's one of the more important statistics that people look at when trying to decide, you know, are you going to be a good pro or not? Because typically that number doesn't seem to really increase or decrease a lot between college and pro. So if you're not completing a high percentage in college, the odds of doing that in the pros are probably not so good.
Yeah, and Josh Freeman, one of those players that may not be real high on too many people's radars, probably, do you think he'll go in the first round? Probably not.
I think there's a reasonable chance he'll go anywhere from the middle of the first round down, but I also think in the end that's probably too high for him. I would probably like to see him more as a second-round draft pick, but because this class is so weak at quarterback, I think he's probably going to get overdrafted, and I bet he'll end up in the middle to late first round.
Mm-hmm. But with some good grooming, with some good mentorship, Josh Freeman is one of those players, like you say, he's got the good prototypical build of those quarterbacks. He could be making some pretty big headlines over the next 5-10 years.
Absolutely. He does have a chance. I'll give him that. He's got a shot.
Very good. Who are some of the other, other than quarterbacks, anybody else you're looking at right now? Sanchez, Stafford, and Freeman being the three musketeers, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. And one of the other names that's coming up for later in the draft is it seems like a lot of teams are speaking pretty highly about Stephen McGee out of Texas A&M. Mm. Again, he's not the prototypical size. He's got about 6'3", 225, so right at that Stafford Sanchez level of size. Basically, most of his talents were hidden at Texas A&M because he just wasn't asked to throw the ball a lot. He was looked at out of high school as one of the elite high school quarterbacks, but pretty much ran sort of more of a Veer-type offense at Texas A&M. And so what we know about him is he's a great leader. He's got outstanding intangibles. We know he's tough, both physically and mentally. He's very intelligent. He's got a good arm. And really, beyond that, the kid's just raw. He's a long-term project for somebody who wants to put some time into him. I think a team that's got a good, solid coaching staff that knows how to develop quarterbacks would be pretty wise to go and pick up somebody like Stephen Magee in maybe the fourth, fifth round and give him a couple of years to develop. And even if you can't make a starter of him, I mean, a lot of teams nowadays are drafting quarterbacks late in the draft, and, you know, 3 or 4 years later, they're churning them out in a trade for a second-round pick, and they've got their investment back and then some. So I think Stephen Magee could become that kind of a kid.
All right. Well, we only got a couple more minutes here to talk about some of the other skill positions going through. Let's go to running backs real quickly. Anybody else making some big headlines who we didn't talk about last week?
Let's see. On the running backs, I think people are waiting to see certainly what's going to happen with Knowshon Moreno. Mm-hmm. He's still my favorite running back in this class. He does just about everything solid you'd want to do, with the exception of top-end speed. So I think the difference between him and Beanie Wells, who's probably the other top running back here, is probably those two at the top. It's going to be who fits better in the offense based on where they're selected. So those guys are still the elite running backs in this draft, and there's really nobody I think is going to pass them here in the short term with just a couple weeks to go.
Yeah, I like Beanie Wells personally out of Ohio State, 6'1", 235, big guy, going to be hard to stop if he's put into the right situations.
Absolutely. Another big guy who's interesting and who I think is going to, I think might be a good fit on a team like Houston is looking for the second half of a running back combination there, is Rashad Jennings out of Liberty. Mm. 6'1", 231, big back. He's got some decent quickness, some good vision, reasonable top-end speed, very good after contact, always falls forward, and can even catch the ball. So I think he's somebody who a team could probably pick up probably in the third round and put on the Thunder end of a Thunder and Lightning running back combination, and a team can get some good value out of a running back like that.
Very good. Moving on to wide receivers. Is Michael Crabtree still the favorite?
Yep, he's got to be. The thing about his injury and him not being able to do anything since the postseason started is you sort of can't lose your starting job when you're not doing anything to do so. So he's still the number one receiver. He's going to seemingly offers everything except top end speed, and I think depending on how the draft plays out, he's no worse than the second receiver off the board. And based on sheer talent, he is the best receiver in this draft, and probably the best receiver to come out since Johnson with the Lions, Calvin Johnson, did a couple years ago.
Very good. Well, we've got about 2 minutes left, and one other thing I just quickly want to touch on is of those scenarios that you laid out with the color decision, what do you think is most likely going to happen as far as moving some of these draft choices around? Who do you think is most likely to be the starting quarterback for the Broncos next year?
I think regardless of what the team does in this draft, the starting quarterback will be the winner of the Orton-Sims duel there, and my guess would be Kyle Orton is going to win that. That's not a lock, but to be honest, I'm not sure exactly where Sims stands on that lacerated kidney issue he had going on. And he was looking pretty good before that, but he certainly hadn't locked anything up in Tampa Bay. And, of course, John Gruden is very hit and miss on his quarterbacks. You're hot 1 week, and he doesn't want to see you the next week. So I have a feeling Orton came for a reason, and he'll probably get the start for this next season. And my guess is if that team develops some defense, which is going to be very tough in 1 year, and with a new 3-4 strategy, and get some running back health and production, then Orton has the ability to certainly get a team at least to the playoffs, you know, get them to a 10-6 record and see what could happen from there.
Very good, very good. Well, it should be all very exciting as we're going into the later part of it, or the beginning of April, and the draft is coming up in about 3 weeks. So certainly going to be interesting, certainly going to be a whole lot more more moves and changes going on. And Joe, I want to go to get you in one more time, at least one more time before draft day, to get your final first round draft picks in, and see how well we do. Anything else you wanted to touch on?
I think that'll about do it for now. It's getting short on time for the draft, and it's going to be really exciting.
Very good. Well, thank you once again, Joe. You've been listening to the FootballDiehards.com podcast. Be sure to check out the website, www.footballdiehards.com. Got news and views with Bob Harris, senior editor, and of course, we'll be keeping up to date on all the draft moves going on as we get closer. Until next time, this has been the FootballDiehards.com podcast.